Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSat certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
I would think so, too. I'm feeling like we have a little technical difficulty. Maybe it's because my guest is calling on Zoom, although I had a Zoom guest last Monday night. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask us to stop our video so that we can just talk to each other that way, and that gives us more bandwidth. Because I'm telling you, I've got such a good show today. I am so excited to be interviewing Richard. I'm just going to keep his last name confidential. He can tell you if he wants to, but he is really somebody who has shown the world what good recovery looks like. He's a coach, and he used such a variety of tools to get clean, sober, and more than that, recovered. And now he and his wife are working together to help people heal, and he's doing that through the Naked Truth Project. So I am going to say, Richard, welcome to Recovery Radio. How are you? I can hear you. You're yes, and I think we just had a little bit of a bandwidth problem. You know, this COVID-19 thing is really interfering with the technology, you know. So I really wanted to talk with you a little bit about your life because I feel like how their husbands or spouses can recover from the toughest disorder in the world. And so would you share a little bit about your history before I start asking you specific questions?
Yeah, sure, Carol. One of the things I'm not too sure on how long we're actually on the radio for now. Just give me a quick time scale so I know what I'm dealing with.
Absolutely, and I will always let you know when it's time to wrap it up, but we are on until 5 minutes till 3 the Eastern Standard Time.
I can give you a 5 minute, 10 minute pot of history if that's okay of me, and then you can fire away the questions if that's okay.
Perfect.
Okay, a little bit of kind of history then. Yes, I am a sex addict, but I'll give you a little bit of history and then you can fire the questions away at me for your listeners, obviously, as well. But firstly, thanks very much indeed for inviting me on. It's a great opportunity for me. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Looking back, Carol, I've only been an addict in waiting all my life, although my sex addiction didn't really surface until the advent of broadband. I had a violent father, emotional neglect by my mother, sexual bullying as a small boy, isolation of family secrets, grooming and sexual abuse by my head teacher and minister, never feeling that I belonged, and exposed to erotic books at home and basic porn at school. As a consequence, I kind of lacked the ability to connect emotionally and practically in all sorts of ways. I solved my own problems and never really sort of tried to help anybody. My wife described me as Richie, or Richard. As a child, in essence, what happened to me is I learned to lie, minimize, and deceive. And those were my coping strategies. to me, there was nothing wrong with it. I avoided conflict because of my violent father, to please people and to gain affirmation from people because my mother was emotionally distant. I used to self-soothe for my music, and it's the only way that I sort of got approval from others. So I'm a reasonable musician. I kind of hid behind my politeness, and it was a mask that I presented to the public. I basically socially isolated unless performing music or working. So I was a very independent person. My addiction probably begin in my 50s in hotel rooms when working away from home by looking at late night TV, which moved on to pornography and later acting out with others. I have to stress, I really hated being an addict. I just was not getting anywhere. I was engrossed, my brain wasn't working properly, but I didn't realize I had a problem. I actually thought everybody did it. I tried to stop, but really couldn't. As I say, I didn't know I had a problem. D-Day, I've got to say, really did save my life, but traumatized my life. Transferred my trauma to my wife. I was able to become sober very, very quickly. But for me, that was the easy part. The underlying inappropriate behaviors, especially lying, were more difficult to address. I'm ashamed to say that I kind of increased my wife's trauma through a year of dribble disclosure. And that was horrendous. That was really horrendous for her. I just couldn't tell the truth, Carol, because of shame and fear. It sort of kind of started to come to a head when my wife insisted that we have an intensive and a polygraph, or the marriage was over. So we went to Milton Magnus in Houston, and I've got to say, he saved our marriage. And after our intensive with him, the recovery journey really started. I've got to say, it really is the hardest thing I've ever done, Carol. I often this recovery and relational recovery as the hair and the tortoise. My wife's the hair and I'm the tortoise. My wife's streaming ahead with recovery, dragging me forwards. But I've still got my shell of armor on. I'm kind of holding back, but I'm absolutely convinced I am to get that challenge. You did allude to recovery activities, and I've since 7 years now, my recovery activities are too many in respect to the program. My wife and I did do an intensive. I had to work on reclaiming my lost child. I had to identify my inappropriate behaviors, which is an interesting one because I always thought my behaviors were perfect.
That's the answer. Yeah.
With myself. Oh, your dog's there. I had to adjust my family of origin issues. My wife and I have been on couples retreats. We've been through counseling. We've been through coaching, education. I've had practical tools. I have done my APSATS training because I'm now a coach helping other guys out of sex addiction. And I've been through a 12-step program. I sponsor at it. And my personal training, I've been involved in 15 evening sessions of mindfulness. I'm a qualified NLP practitioner. I've done ASAPS training with Vice on sex addiction, intimacy, anorexia. The Braveheart's mentor.
Richard, you have so much training. Now, I want to ask you one thing.
I'm on a travel later here.
No, that's okay. I wanted to ask you because obviously you struggled with really developing that relationship honesty you needed with your wife. I know you, and I know that you were in a heightened state of denial, and that's why it took you so long and so much intervention before you figured out what you would need to do to get clean. would you be able to share with our audience what Milton Magnus actually helped you uncover about yourself that really led to your decision to do your life differently?
It's interesting that, because the disclosure with Milton was a therapeutic disclosure. And what it did, it provided the baseline that really it was for me to tell the truth, but also it was for my wife to hear that I had told the truth. It was clearly double-edged, this. It's not just all about the addict telling the truth and passing a polygraph. The spouse wants to know, she knows the story. I had no concept of that when I went to see Milton. I thought it was all about me, but it wasn't. It really is about the partner as well, and starting with the process of recovery and making the partner safe. That is crucial. What did he set us off with basic tools of check-ins. He said, basically maybe obtaining sobriety, but I was pretty sober anyway. No, I wouldn't say I was pretty sober. I was sober. I'd gone through the sobriety cycle. So the sobriety for me was not an issue. It just instantly stopped after D-Day. But he said something very, very informative for me in the intensive. He said to me, Richard, you have a thought and brain disorder. And I looked him in the face, and I did say yes. I said politely yes. I'll be honest with you, and I've said this to Milton's face as well, after I've met him subsequently, I thought he was an idiot. I really thought he was an idiot. How can I possibly have a thought and brain disorder? I'm an intelligent guy. I've got a degree. I do this, I do that. I can't possibly think I've got a thing, brain and thought disorder. I've got to say he was 100% correct, because I had to then set about working out what I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know. And that was the major problem. You don't know what the problem is.
Oh, absolutely. And so when he explained that all your behaviors that were really intrusive and very pathological in terms of how it affected your coupleship, how it affected your sense of self, when he explained that it was really a brain disorder, it was like you fought it. Didn't that legitimize why you had so much difficulty stopping and getting out of your own way?
It took me a long time, Carol. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an aha moment in the intensive, because, as I say, I left the intensive still thinking I didn't have a problem. It took an awful lot of self-analysis and inward looking, yes, the counsellors, yes, the talking to people, yes, the education, to make me realise that I really did have a problem.
There you go. And so, obviously, that's what we want our addicts to understand. It's one of the recovery tools we ask of them, is not only to read their program manual or their program book so that they can develop that fellowship and that understanding, the 12 steps, if you will, or their own religious programming, but it's also we want them to be able to understand their brains so that they will then understand why it is a big deal if they watch a Victoria's Secret commercial and begin fantasy, or it is a big deal if they click on a story that talks about women in bathing suits, that starts that addictive cycle going. Even though it's on the low end, it doesn't matter. Once the brain is lit up, you know, you are open for lots and lots of temptations, and sex addiction cycle will get started again at some point. Now, you were talking about all those tools, and you're an APSATS coach, and
yes.
I just kind of want to know the timeline. Your addiction started at what age, and then what month and year did you actually abstain?
Right. I now realize I have a massively addictive personality.
I've
been addicted to a lot of things in my life, one of which was music. I go into things in a very addictive way. Because, and if you take the definition of addiction, that it starts to affect your relationships, your jobs, and everything financially, I did that. But the sex addiction really only, I look at pornography, yes, when I was a child, at various times in my life, I did that. For example, when I was in the army, yes, for about 2 years, I got involved in pornography, then I dropped it. The big problem happened with me, really, is when I started to work away from home, was bored in hotel rooms, started to look at late night TV, and then the broadband came in. And that was like the floodgates opening. Now I don't mind telling you my age. I'm 69, and that happened in my early 50s. So really, sex addiction only came in my early 50s. But it escalated quite quickly. And I've now been 7 years sober. So D-Day was in my 62, 63, something like that. I can't give you the exact months, days, or about that. But sobriety happened virtually instantaneously after D-Day. Yes, I was having to pull myself back, but if I didn't pull myself pretty quickly backwards, then my marriage is over.
Well,
that was a massive driving force.
That makes sense. So, again, you've been in recovery how long?
7 years now.
All right. And so in that 7 years, you decided to understand your own addiction and all the collateral consequences,
yes.
The intimacy,
yes.
Anorexia, and, you know, the partner betrayal. And so tell me how you helped your wife heal.
The first thing that has to happen is you have to have a realization of what you've done to your wife. That realization, I thought it was all about me. I'm the sex addict. I need to solve the problems. If I solve the problems, everything's going to be hunky-dory. That's not true. You have to spend an awful lot of time helping your wife heal. And the big problem with that is the fact that, number one, I didn't understand the problem. I didn't know what I was doing and the way I was behaving was still affecting my wife. I thought, I'm not acting out now, therefore what's the problem? That is a fallacy, because the deep-rooted hurt that you've caused has now got to be addressed. You can't put it right, you have to address it. And I had to go through a massive educational program and a massive amount of understanding of how my behaviors were still affecting my wife. If I tell a lie, like for example, I go to the shop and I'll buy about chocolate and eat it on the way home. And my wife says to me, what did you buy at the shop? Oh, and I said I bought bread and milk, just as an example. But I didn't tell her about the bar of chocolate, which I'd eaten. And then she sees the receipt to say, you bought a bar of chocolate. Yeah, well, I ate it. Now, to her, that's a massive trigger. Why? Because of my lying. So I had to realize what my inner behaviors and thought processes were doing to my wife.
Yes, I get that. But any lie sends her right back into, if he could lie about this, what else is he lying
exactly.
about? Yeah.
And I had to analyze not just the lying aspect, but all of my behaviors. I had to say, what behavior is really affecting my wife? And that was a massive, massive amount of self-realization and talking to my wife about what it was that triggered her. And then I also had to identify what it was that had led me into those behavioral responses to things. And it's like Jahari's window, which I'm quite sure you'll be aware of, Kel. You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
I can say, no, I don't lie. But it's so ingrained in me, I don't realize I'm lying sometimes. That sounds crazy. And you listen to people saying, of course you know when you're not lying. Well, no, I don't. Because of the way my brain's set up, I have to be highly conscious about what I'm saying and how I'm behaving. I can gaslight. I can deceive. I can manipulate. I can. And this has been, for 65 years, my natural way of behaving. And I have to change it. And that's so hard.
Well, absolutely. And then I do believe for most addicts, I don't know if this would apply to you, but that intimacy anorexia is a very tough battle too, because not only are you working on your recovery and you're working on transparency and honesty about also trying to figure out how you can find connection and emotionality in your relationship when most addicts don't have that, and they're actually having to cultivate it while their wife is so angry with them.
Yeah, I often try to explain to guys that come on groups that I lead that as addicts, we don't have the tools. We don't. People say to me, oh, you've got to become more, you've got to become more empathetic. You've got to show empathy. Yeah, I hear the words you're saying. The problem with the addict is they don't know how to do it. It's like the spanner is not in the toolbox. They don't have the tools. Why don't they have the tools? Because, well, in my case, I can't say any case. In my case, as a child, I wasn't taught those tools.
Well, and as a matter of fact, the kind of abuse and neglect that you experience, the kind of criticism that you daily basis made you or encouraged you to keep your feelings locked in and not to show those feelings. And so it was a survival skill that in a marriage is required. Having feelings and talking about emotions is absolutely required for connection.
And I didn't have that too. I just did not have that ability to be able to be empathic with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, how are you feeling today? Well, I'm fine, thank you. That was it. Mm-hmm. I had to look up in the dictionary what the meaning of the word empathic meant. And I still didn't. I read the words.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand it. I didn't get it.
Well, I understand that. And so you have done what I always encourage men to do, to work on their own personal recovery skills while they are working on their relational skills. And you have done a fabulous job of getting that done. And, you know, it always is a process, so I made it sound like it got finalized, but it never is finalized. But tell us a little bit about your marriage so that we can leave our partners that typically listen to the show with some hope, strength, and recovery, as well as they might want their husbands to hear more about you and even perhaps get some coaching from you as to how you did it. I know that you coach men on how to both have good recovery and good relational recovery.
There's three areas here. You've got to look at your relationship. It's the three-legged stool, Carol. You've got to look at your recovery. You've got to look at your wife's recovery. And you've got to look at the recovery of the marriage. There are three legs to this stool. And if you don't address everyone, that stool is not a stool, and it's going to fall, quite clearly. And we still work on our relational recovery. We still work on my recovery. I still work on my recovery. And I am still working on my wife's recovery from the trauma. So you have to take those three aspects, and you've got to say, what are you going to do in each one of those three areas? Quite clearly. And I do my own recovery, yes. I did the recovery of my wife and myself. For example, every morning we get up, we have breakfast together, we light a candle, and we actually do a reading together. And sometimes during the day we'll do a check-in. And when it comes down to looking at my wife's trauma, I have to have that sixth sense of how she's going into what we call the room of doom. Because she will go down into the room of doom, but it's my job to help her come out of that room of doom. I put her there, so I have to pull her out. No, I can't pull her out, Carol. I can help her come out. That's an incorrect statement. I'm sure you realize that. I'm sure your listeners will appreciate that.
Well, but I do think in some ways you don't pull her out, but you lend your hand if she chooses to take it as another resource of getting out of that. Now, was that room of gloom or room of doom?
Room of doom. Okay. We call it the room of doom.
Okay.
And I can try to perceive where she's going down into that room of doom, so to speak, really. It doesn't happen very often, Carol. It used to happen quite a lot. But, yeah, it's going to be, there's going to be those moods taking place without a shadow of doubt. And it's an active process. And you've got to be able to understand what you're doing. So, for example, for my recovery, as I said, the sobriety is not an issue. I had to go through reclaiming my lost child. I had to go through to making peace with my trauma, to my parents. And that was an effort that I had to go through. And in terms of, you know, helping my wife here, yes, I have to help her all the time with her trauma. And we look at videos all the time. No, not all the time. We look at videos, a number of them, sometimes on a daily basis. She looks at her videos, I look at mine. And we do take this very, very seriously. It's not something which you can suddenly compartmentalize and say it's done, dusted. You have got to work at it.
Well, there is no doubt that you have to work on this. And so you and your lovely wife have spent countless hours of energy helping addicts and partners in the UK and actually work on a very specialized program. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about the Naked Truth.
Yeah, the Naked Truth Project is a charity. It's a charity set up in Manchester in the UK. And it really came about because the founder of it, a person called Ian Henderson, and he makes this, I don't mind giving his name out because it's very public. He set this charity up because of issues that happened, not with him, but with a family member. And he set up this wonderful charity where people are offering support for partners, traumatized partners, support for the addict, going into schools to address pornography. There's a whole charity base going on here whereby they're providing support against pornography, against the sex trade, and all of these things, but also support, helping partners. And my wife is looking at the partners, but I'm also going back in with the addicts. And on top of that, my wife does podcasts and videos, along with the person who's better recovery, who's a person called Kat Edlington, and I'm sure you know Kat. And they do the podcasts for partners, and we're starting to do the pod. So they're the videos, not podcasts, Carol. Apologies for that. They're doing psychoeducational videos on various aspects of dealing with trauma, dealing with betrayal, trigger management, things like that. There's a whole plethora of programs you can buy into. And they've been all done for the partners. But we're starting to do them now for the addicts. So it's a very, very active project that's taking place there.
Well, it has been a premier program in the UK, and the UK doesn't have a lot of services. And although it can be experienced by anybody, all over the world, it is a real resource for...
Yeah, that's interesting, because I do run an online group.
Right.
And I've just finished a session with the guys, as I call them. And you know this, I've sent it around your book, Health or Heal. I ran a 16-week program for the essays on... you know, helping your wife heal, and it's based on your book, Health, and thank you for writing it. There were six people on that group when we started up. One person dropped out, but there were five people on the group, and two from Australia, two from America, and one from Paris.
Mm.
Nobody from the UK, amazingly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Isn't that amazing?
It's just staggering.
And we're so interconnected. Technology is the worst thing and the best thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the group I run, I'm running it on a Sunday night. Every Sunday night I'm on group with the addicts. The majority of people are actually from the UK. But we have people from America. We have people from New Zealand. And I do know that my wife, who runs the partner side, they have people from Norway. Now people, again, from New Zealand, from Slovenia, I think. I don't know an awful lot about exactly where the people come from, but it's worldwide, although we're based in the UK. But I have to say, Carol, that we recovered through going to America. America is way ahead of the UK. The expertise in the UK is not there like it's in America. And the Naked Truth Project is really one of the major leaders in the UK. I would say it's the leader.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I have to say that, you know, you've really been instrumental in helping men across the world. And I'm going to tell my listening audience, you know, I have that post-traumatic growth course, which is a course for partners to understand the changes they've made and the changes that they can make further. And I actually highlight Richard and his wife as a couple that have found post-traumatic growth and are working together. And, you know, so oftentimes when a partner has been traumatized, when she's out of the fog and she's working on herself, she immediately wants to give back. And certainly that is what you, Richard, and your lovely wife did, is you wanted to give back. And so in this partner course, you get to see them, not together, but separately, talking about how they learned post-traumatic growth. So if you would, Richard, would you share one principle that you hung on to give you the confidence to take your life to the next level and to give back?
One principle. I think that's actually quite easy. I have a question to answer, because the principle that I want to have is that I want to be the person that I've always wanted to be in God's image and aspire to that. That's my principle. That's what I'm living by now. I want to be that better person. I wish I'd done this 20, 30, 40 years ago, because I've lost so much by not doing it. That's my guiding principle. I am going to continue recovering to become that better person and have that better relationship with my wife and have that better relationship with people and with God in its entirety. That's my guiding principle. I want to be that better person.
Right. And so obviously you do that by looking at where you need to heal and to continue to work on that. And then that giving back principle, which is the 12th step if you're in a 12-step program.
Yeah, exactly. So and part of my recovery process is to help other people.
Yeah,
that is quite clear, because one of the things I always say to my guides, you know, what's the opposite of addiction? And they struggle with that. When I first posed the question to them, the opposite of addiction is quite clearly, in my opinion, connection. And if you don't have connection, whether it's with other guys who are struggling, whether you don't have connection with your family, whether you don't have connection with God, whether you don't have a connection with your wife, all of these things, you're doomed. You're utterly doomed. That's what I didn't have. I lost it in my childhood. I never had it.
Yes, exactly. And so I want to say to you, because I guarantee you there will be men that will be listening to this show because their wives will have heard it, and they'll say, I want you to listen to this podcast and listen to how this man took his life from serious addiction into giving back. And so how would you help a man connect who has never really experienced connection?
That's a good question, Carol. One of the things that has to happen very early on is a realization of where you are at and what are your behaviors and what are your inner driving forces. And I did that by going through a whole program of reclaiming my lost child. I had to work out what my values were. I had to work out what my family secrets were. I had to work out all of these things. I had to work out why I lied. I had to work out why I gaslighted. I had to work out why I couldn't deal with conflict. All of these things. So one of my first things I'll say to you guys is, look, you've got past the sobriety thing. You've now got to work out what are your behaviors, what are your values, where do you want to go to? And quite often I come across a brick wall that they just don't know. And I have to help them explore what their values are in life, where they want to go, and guide them on how they're going to aspire to be that better person. And then on that, they'll be helping their wife to heal.
Well, absolutely. And it's those kind of tips that you and I both know are planted inside of the brain. And, you know, at some point when there is a connection and that connection light goes on in the brain, we'll have an addict say, oh, my gosh, I just felt it. It felt wonderful. I want more of this. And, of course, so many men learn about connection in their program, no matter what that is, Men of the Battle, Seven Pillars, SAA, SA, you know, even a project like yours. If a man wanted to work with you, Richard, how could they get a hold of you?
The best way to do it is to go to my wife's and my website, which is www.holding.com. Holding, H-O-L-D-I-N-G, hyphen, hope, H-O-P-E, .com. And there you can get in touch with my wife or me. I just add one thing to what you just said there, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
I run a program to get people sober. It's called in the UK Click to Kick, because there'd be probably pornography on the web, so click to kick, the play on words there. I had a text from a guy who'd been on the program about a year ago, and he said, Richard, I've been sober for a year. You promised me a whole different life when I set about this program. When I was on the program, I didn't know what you were talking about. He said, but after 12 years of now getting connection and being far more in tune with my wife and my friends and my family, I know what you mean. And I'm never going to lose that again.
That is exactly what I'm referencing. And so, obviously, there are many, many partners who are wounded, and they don't trust the positive changes that a man is making because they don't want to get duped again. And so it takes a lot of time for the man to continue to practice the principles, both in help her heal as well as the recovery principles, to make a difference. What do you tell them so that they don't get discouraged and they keep at it and, of course, don't give up?
The SA. It's all about, what I say to these guys, I said, it's all about safety. You put your partner, your wife, into a place. place where she is not safe. And you are asking her now to be safe with you. And what you have to do is you have to build safety up. You have to demonstrate that you can make her safe. There'll always be a worry that something will go wrong because you've hurt her in the most appalling way. And you have to analyze, as I said earlier, all of your behaviors, and you must never, ever, ever get exasperated by your wife if she gets triggered. You must never say, oh, I'm not going back down there again. Look, you just push her off the cliff by saying that. You can't do that. What I train the guys, I says, look, you've got to look at it from your wife's perspective. If you suddenly don't report in when you said you're going to report in, you're massively triggered. Your life has changed irrevocably. And you have to deal with that. And you have to nurture her through this process. You must never give up. Never get exasperated. Because I can tell you now, your wife's putting up with an awful lot more than you're putting up with.
Well, and you know, what we've always learned about addiction and have known for a long, long time and have heard is that you can't work on your own addiction for somebody else. And yet what we know about a process addiction, like sexual addiction, that you can actually create a desire to stop for the wife, and that eventually that turns around and it becomes your own desire to get clean and to stay healthy and to work on the relationship. But there are men that have said, you know, if we get a divorce, I don't know if I will be strong enough to maintain this program myself. So what would you say to them, Richard? Because there are a lot of men that wonder if their life can ever change for good.
It can change, and I'm a very positive person, and I say you can change, but you've got to have the motivation and the will to change. Don't give up, because if you give up and you go back to addiction, I can tell you you'll probably go back with a bigger vengeance than what you started off with, and you will destroy yourself. You'll be committing suicide. I really do want to tell the guys that. Do not give up. Do not get exasperated. Because if you do, it's the end of it. I've seen this with guys who've gone back. It's not pleasant. Don't give up. Don't get exasperated. Work at it.
Yes, I hear that emotion in your voice. I know that you believe that. And when a man does, because it typically takes a wife or a partner, I should say, because this does happen to men. Men can be partners too. But truly, it takes 3 to 5 years to really help her heal. And interestingly enough, that's about the same amount of time that it takes a man to learn recovery, to practice it, and to close down and their brain and develop new neurocircuitry that's healthy and organized and porn and sex free. So I love that you encourage men to just keep at it. And sometimes the way they can do that is to enter a partner sensitive men's group, like the one that you ran with Help Her Heal.
Must have that. Yes. I've seen people go to counselors who are not partner sensitive, and they do a lot of damage. They do a lot of damage. The first counselor that I went to did a lot of damage because they were not partner sensitive and they were not properly sensitive. I always say to the guys, next thing I say to the guys, Carol, I give myself an example. I say, look, I'm 69, and I said that my adverse behavior started in my late teens. I have got 50 plus years of programming of my brain. You cannot expect to do that in 5 minutes to reprogram it. It's not like an iOS system that you just reboot the computer. It's not like that. What I say to them is that it's going to take a long time to reprogram your brain because you're so embedded in your behaviors. They have got to realize that. And
Absolutely. And so would you share with our listening audience what it was like to run the Help Her Heal group for the 6 men all over the world?
I started off with a great degree of trepidation. I am all my life I've been a professional trainer and I have a lot of training courses. And I've got those skills. But I came into this with a degree of trepidation. But the great thing is that if you've got the right mix of guys in the program who are going to take recovery seriously and take their wife's recovery seriously and dealing with their trauma, you have a fantastic group which gets a momentum of its own. And the group will actually drive itself forward. And I started off with guys who were probably came along because their wives had told them to come along. Yeah, okay, this does happen. But by the end of the group, they were saying, oh, is that it? What are you doing next? I want the next course. Please put me on another one. So it was enlightening and wonderful to see some of the changes in guys who I didn't think initially were going to change and to get a lot out of it. But they really got involved. They took it seriously, they participated, and they came out the other end understanding what they had to do for their recovery and to help their wife get over the trauma, i.e. help her heal. It's a perfect title, Carol. Well done.
Well, thank you. And you and I both know that those concepts are very simple, and yet they are so hard to do consistently. One, because they're relational skills, and relational skills are always hard to practice. And then two, because oftentimes the wife, she wants her husband to practice them. She loves the book, but she's afraid that he might use those relational skills to hide what he's doing again. And so it's so important for men to understand that they have to prove their consistency. They have to walk their talk for days, weeks, months, and years to really get her trust again.
That's 100% correct, Carol. And I do see that. I have comments by the guys coming back on the course, and they say things like, oh, you're just reciting the book now. I know what you're doing. I don't believe you. And I say, look, your wife's got every reason not to believe you because you've liked her so much in the past. What she's looking at is consistency, 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 recovery, recovery, recovery. It's going on all the time. And that's the answer. It's consistency, consistency. And it's stepping in to addressing your wife's traumas, addressing her betrayal, addressing her triggers. Very much so.
I'm very glad you said that, Richard, because what I always say, I probably say it at least 30 times throughout the book, is that what a wife wants to hear several times a week is that she knows that you know that you caused her pain. And you would think, as an addict, well, I don't want to bring that up. I don't want to bring up the conflict. She knows that. I don't want to admit that again and again and again. But truly, there's a healing aspect to that statement. You know I caused you this pain, and I can see you're angry right now. And I want to reassure you, I am here to help work it through because I owe that to you, and I want our relationship to work. And when a man can say those kinds of things, it diffuses her anger and begins to build just a seed of trust.
That's correct, Carol. And the other thing is I ask the guys, why didn't you want to step in and say, I caused that trigger by what I've done in the past? And basically, it's because they don't want to feel hurt themselves. They don't want the anguish. They don't want the aggression. They don't want this temperature rising as a couple. And I'll say, look, what your wife is suffering is 10 times what you're suffering. Now step in there and accept the pain.
Oh, That is excellent. So as we wrap up the show, is there any last words that you would like to share with our listening audience who is primarily partners, pain, their recovery, their husbands, or their hope?
The hope, there is hope. But your husband, the essay, has got to work on recovery. They have to work on recovery. They have to take it seriously. There is hope. And there is a way forward. You can't get your old marriage back. I do tell people that quite bluntly. But you can build a better relationship, the one that you always wanted. But you've both got to recover. And you've got to recover actively, very, very much so, and work out what you need to do to support that stool, as I mentioned before, the couple, the partner and the addict. That's got to be very stable on all three legs.
Oh, yeah, that's
there
great.
There is hope. You can get there, but it's going to be hard work, one step at a time.
Yeah, that is great advice. Thank you so much, Richard. And one last time, tell our listening audience how they might get a hold of you to find out about your groups or to find out about the Naked Truths Project, or last but not least, get coaching specifically from you.
The best way to get in touch with me, which I can then directly to the Naked Truth website, www.holding-hope.com. But if you want to Google the Naked Truth Project, www.thenakedtruthproject.com, you'll find it.
All right. Well, thank you again, and especially for all your work you've done for me. You've run the groups. You're in APSATS with me. You've done the partner post-traumatic growth course. You are high energy, and you have helped a lot of people, and blessings to you and your lovely wife.
Yeah, thanks very much indeed. Okay, then. Thanks very much, Carol. All the best.
Thank you.
All
right. And so, again, I want to recommend that you re-listen to this show and let your husband hear what it looks like to have good recovery. You know, it takes a lot of work, but it has so many benefits. And I just cannot encourage people enough to follow through with the 12th step, which is giving back. Now, you got to get healthy first, but truly, when you do get healthy, it is amazing what God has in store for you. So, you know that I'm a big believer in APSATS. That's why we do this show. APSATS is that incredible organization that's partner sensitive. And I always want you to follow your heart and to practice intentional self-care and to have hope, if nothing else, within yourself. I love if you've got a relationship that you can work on, but if not, it's about you figuring out what you need to do to be successful in your own work through this betrayal journey. And as I say at the end of every show, there'll always be you, and you need to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. So we'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.